Hey, Mr. Bernstein, thanks so much for taking the time to call in with us.
Oh, gosh, thank you for having me.
All right, now we'll tell our listeners, the reason we're talking to Corbin Bernstein here, TV legend and movie star here, is because he's got the new movie, romantic comedy, First Lady, coming to select cities on February 14th. Now, this thing has a unique premise. I don't know if we want to say it's, you know, it's in the vein, you know, of American President or Dave or some of those rom-com political things in the White House that we've seen. But break, give me the basic premise for me here. Break it down for me.
Sure. Yeah, it is a rom-com. It's a nice light. It's almost, I hesitate to call it a fairy tale, even though it is, because that sort of puts it in another place. It's about a woman who's married to the president, Nancy Stafford, who plays the woman. She is the first lady of the president. He dies in office. It's an election year, and his vice president takes over, and then his vice president runs for, you know, basically what would have been his second term. But he's unmarried, and he needs a first lady. It's very important to have a first lady. And evidently this has been done in history a couple of times. There have been a couple first ladies who are not actually married to the president. Who act in the duty of the first lady, the duties of the first lady. So Nancy becomes his first lady, Catherine Morales. And into the mix comes an old flame of hers from back when they were teens, King Max of a country that we've made up with an accent that I've made up and a wardrobe that fits pretty much a lot of different places. And I come in and rekindle this old romantic relationship as she's going through this election process. And in the end, let's just say this is the fairy tale part, everybody ends up happy, which is really nice in today's time, right?
Yeah, we kind of need it.
Nice.
Wait, so what? We got a bit of, I guess your character's got a bit of a Fredonia thing going on. What's the fictional country that you come from?
I can't even pronounce the thing, Mandanovia or something. I don't even know the name of it. I could never get it while we were shooting it. I kept saying, what is it called again? So I had to, I'll tell you, it's interesting as an actor. So if you've got a fictional country and you don't even really place it where we didn't say it's, you know, between Turkey and Iraq or we didn't even place it. I didn't know if it was in what continent it was on, but it's just a fictional country. You've got to come up with an accent that's not quite this or not quite that, but you've got to be consistent with it. And, you know, every day I would say, I would open my mouth occasionally on a line and go, that's not him. that's a French him, or that's the German him. So it was interesting to come up with this accent that you got to sort of make up that sounds like this and sounds like that, but it's not quite.
That sounds pretty fun role to play. Hey, dote on your co-star Nancy Stafford for a little bit. We remember her, you know, mostly from Matlock, but you know, she's been in a ton of
right.
stuff. But what made her so great to work with on this?
You know, we've just known each other, and it's, you know, she's a wonderful actress. She's, you know, one of these actresses who's just gone about her life, living life, and never went kind of like myself in a way. You know, you don't. Oh, I don't know, over-promote yourself to such a largeness. You're sort of living life with friends and family, and we've always known each other. We've always said, let's work together, and it just happened to be this one glorious time where we got the chance to do it. I think she was actually the one who suggested me for the role to Nina May, who wrote and directed it. And it was one of these times where we finally just got that opportunity to work together. Again, we've known each other. Matlock goes back to, you know, I believe that was NBC back when we were doing, you know, L.A. Law. So we've known each other forever, and it was just one of these things where two people, you know, at this point in life get to work with each other who really love and respect one another, and I think that all showed on screen.
Absolutely. I mean, you mentioned sort of how, you know, you had – both of you had big roles over the years. I got to ask you about L.A. Law while I have you on here. I think it's only like one of – 5 shows to win Best Drama 4 times. I think it's that, Mad Men, Game of Thrones, West Wing, and Hill Street Blues. That's rare air right there, man. What was so fun about that divorce lawyer, Arnie Becker? Like, how was so fun about that role? And, you know, how do you think that show, I mean, to this day, it sort of changed television?
Well, it was certainly part of the progression of television. We went from the, you know, the kinds of shows that we're on were, at least that we were coming out of, were sort of soap operas, which there's a bit of in L.A. Law, the continuing story, but they were, you know, there was a lot of, you know, Charlie's Angels and all that kind of stuff on, you know, sort of Escape, Fantasy Island, things like that. And L.A. Law comes along after Hill Street Blues, by the way, which really broke the ground, another Stephen Bochco show, and really started getting into some, you know, real topical issues of the day. In fact, that was, you know, one of the first shows that did that, way before Law and Order and all these other shows do, you know, really talking about, you know, issues that affect people that you see in the news on a daily basis. You know, I had the wonderful opportunity to play Arnie Becker, who was, you know, somebody we all recognized in society as one of these people who's, you know, the where he places his values are a little bit different from other people. I always played him as an emotionally damaged, you know, guy that covered it up with all of his money and girls and women and whining and dining, you know. I always saw him as a guy who, you know, closed the door and he was alone and he was a wreck, which my secretary, she's wonderful, Susan Rattan, playing Roxanne, always recognized. And that was the beauty of our relationship in the show. But it was a wonderful character because it was rich. It just wasn't, and I think this is when you say it was a groundbreaking show, it wasn't just a character who was a sort of chains around the neck, drive a Porsche, and everything's perfect. I think it was a guy who had layered to the characters, layers and layers of unhappiness underneath all that. And, you know, we were allowed to explore that. So I think that's why the character worked out. It's also, I think all the characters had some degree of that, and that's why the show worked so well and did win all the Emmys.
Awesome. Now, my personal favorite role, I got to ask you before we go, Roger Dorn in Major League. I can't say that name without laughing. You kind of play him different in the first one. He's a little tougher, you know, straight, goes up to Rick Wilding, Vaughn, strike this mother effer out. And then in the sequel, he's a little bit more of a comic relief, you know, not wanting to get, he's whining when he gets beaned by the ball, refusing to come off. He wants to take a lead off first base. But how did you sort of play that role differently between the first one and the second one?
The second one, you know, it's funny, when you do a movie like that, you get the first one, it's the original, and it's all the real stuff, and then, you know, I'm not saying it's in the writing or the direction or the whole thing, the whole vibe is trying to recreate, you know, everything from the first on some level, and I think, you know, I'm not saying it's a mistake I made, I think it was the nature of the beast, you know, you sort of take the highlights of the first and you try to build on them for the second. And the second one, you know, was more about, you know, this, you know, the pathetic part of Roger Dorn. You know, I you know, gets hit in the back and wants to go in the game. You know, it's certainly why I think the first movie is a better movie. I actually think the third movie, Back to the Minors, I did with Scott Bakula, it's completely dismissed by everybody. A lot of people won't even officially call it a Major League movie, but oddly, it returned because of some of the young characters that came up in that movie. Rather than rehashing the same story in the second Major League with the same characters, you know, it was kind of all new characters, and we sort of went back to the way the first movie was. But in the second movie, yeah, you know, you sort of capitalize on all the stuff that really worked in the first one, and, you know, that's, I'm not going to say it's good or bad to do, but it's just the way it is sometimes. Very, very hard to do a second movie and be completely new and innovative about it, because then you're not being what the true to what the first was. I don't know if it makes any sense, but I tell everybody, check out the third one again, and you'll find, you know, if you don't expect it to be Major League, Charlie Sheen, Tom Berenger, you'll see some of the structural stuff that you enjoyed in the first one.
Oh, well, they all still crack me up, man. And you mentioned it, the cast. I mean, Sheen, Berenger, you had Wesley Snipes, Dennis Haysbert, Bob Uecker, Renee Russo. I mean, that first, yourself, of course, that thing is stacked. Is there a line that still cracks you up? For me, it's the stuff your coach always says with his – but what, is there a line or two in that first one that cracks you up?
You know, I don't know if it's a line. It's when I hand him the contract and he throws it on the ground and urinates on it, you know, for lack of a better term, for the radio here. I think there's also one that James Gammon, anything James Gammon, like you said, just that voice, adored, another Zola, you know, all that stuff. But there's, you know, he's talking about when we're all arriving at camp, he's saying something about us being good and high-priced, and I think Berger says, what about him? He goes, that's Dorn, he's just high-priced. You know, just anything he says comes out of his mouth is, you know, God bless him, he's gone now. But he just, and that's the way he talked in life, by the way, you know. Yeah, anything that came out of his mouth was pretty funny.
Awesome. Well, we'll bring it full circle with the First Lady here as we, on the final seconds here. I mean, I know we invite our listeners, obviously, check out, you know, Punisher, the Resident, Happen, Leonard. You got so much TV going on right now, but
Tommy with Edie Falco is just on CBS coming.
What show? What's it called?
A new series called Tommy on CBS with Edie Falco, and I play the ex chief of police of Los Angeles. She's the new chief of police of Los Angeles, and needless to say, we butt heads. Edie Falco.
That'll be awesome. Oh, yeah, she's great. Well, just in closing on First Lady, you know, why is this sort of the perfect movie? It comes out Valentine's Day, so you got the rom-com. But then also, you know, we're in election year, and this is one of those perfect political rom-coms. Talk about why the time is perfect for our listeners to go check it out.
It's not too crazy political, so don't get lost in that. I think it's what's delightful about it is, given everything that we're in the middle of, whatever the aisle, side of the aisle you're on, it's, you know, back and forth and finger pointing and all of that. It's nice to have in that world of Washington a moment of it all works, you know, which is what happens in this film. It's a nice escape in the middle of this sort of very divisive kind of a political environment that we're in, and, you know, love wins all, which, you know, it'd be nice to go to bed one night after watching the news and think that was real.
All right. Well, all right,
but
Ken, we'll get, let you get back to your fictional kingdom.
Go back to
thanks
the fictional
kingdom. Yeah, exactly. All right, Corbin Burnson, thanks so much. You're great.
Thank you, man.